Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Last week, we started this series, Living in My Father's Shadow. And I told you guys that this particular series was inspired by a shadow game that me and Benjamin used to play as we walked on the way to the bus stop when he was younger. The game would not work now because he's a little taller than me and he would have to stoop in order to get into my shadow. But the goal of the shadow, the goal of the game was for Benjamin to make sure his shadow was never seen. And well, along those same lines, if this is truly a Benji-inspired sermon series, you can't have a Benji-inspired sermon series unless I throw out some interesting facts about shadows. So here are some that you may or may not know. A shadow happens when an object blocks light. The closer to the light means the closer the object is to the light means the bigger the shadow. The angle between the object and the light determines the length of the shadow. So the closer you are, the bigger your shadow gets. The higher up and more of an angle, the bigger, the longer your shadow gets. So if you're looking for a thin shadow, back away and make sure the angle's up, and that way you look like a thin person instead of somebody that's not thin. Any reflecting or absorbing object has a shadow. So it's not just things that block light, but it's also things that reflect the light back, while any transparent object does not have a shadow. Shadows caused by the sun are longest early in the morning and late in the afternoon, and they're also longer in the winter because of the angle of the sun. A long time ago, people observed the way shadows were formed by the sun and utilized this principle in making the world's most primitive clocks called sundials. Right. The first person to calculate the size of the planet Earth with a high degree of accuracy used simple geometric equations and measured shadows. So you can actually tell distance by measuring a shadow. If there are multiple light sources, there are multiple shadows. And the overlapping parts of the two lights get darker in the middle. So to sum all of these facts up, the shadow is all about how it interacts with the light. John 8:12 says, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of light." So Jesus is the light, and I am the object. I am either an absorber of the light or a reflector of the light. Isn't that interesting? I can be both, but I'll still create a shadow. And then the shadow I cast will be a great indicator of my relationship to the light. If my shadow is big, then that means, guess what? I'm close to the light. If my shadow is small, that means that, guess what? I'm moving myself away from the light. Now, I found all of these things interesting, but none of this is really the main point. Your interaction with the light isn't what we're actually going to be talking about. We're more interested in the shadow Jesus made during his earthly ministry. The title of this message is Walking in My Father's Shadow, and we discovered last week that the way we walk in our Father's shadow is to follow the Son who was mimicking the Father. So if I stay in the shadow of Jesus, then ultimately I am in the shadow of the Father. And so we want to explore how to fit my shadow and or our church's shadow into his so that we begin to see, people begin to see him. And so along that lines, we want to see Christ, not me. That's the goal. That was the goal of the game as we walked along and I moved this way and Benjamin tried to stay right behind me. The goal of the game was so that you could see the shadow that the sun was creating with me, but ultimately you would not see Benjamin. We didn't want anybody to see we don't want people to see our shadow. We want people to see the shadow that Jesus is casting. That means that we have to allow it. Jesus to be bigger than us in our life. Now, that's hard because I like attention. I do. And so I have to be willing to allow Jesus to become bigger in my life than I am. And then I also have to realize the closer I am to the object, the better chance I have to hide in the shadow. That was one of the things that if I picked up my pace as we were moving along, if Benjamin didn't pick up his pace, then you know what eventually would happen? The top of his shadow would begin to show. Because as I moved away from him, not only did he have to turn all the directions I was going and do all the things that I was doing, he actually had to stay in pretty close proximity because the moment he began to move away, again, part of his shadow would begin to show. And so if I am actually going to do this thing of living in my Father's shadow, it means I have to kind of stay close to what Jesus is. Thus, it would make sense that if we want to reach people the way Jesus did, then we should take an absolute look at his ministry. Hence the reason we are looking at these verses over in Matthew chapter 9, because this is kind of the summation of how Jesus did ministry. We have to make him the focal point of what we're doing. We have to match what we are doing as closely as we can to what he did. Not that we're going to do it exactly like he did it. After all, he lived in first century. We lived in 21st century. Things look a little different in our culture, so we cannot be perfectly aligned with how he did things physically, and we also don't have some of the gifts that he had, but you know what? We should be looking at trying to make a difference. So last week we talked about what did Jesus do, and we went through all the various things that Jesus did in his ministry and how he went about ministering to people, and this week we're going to talk about what Jesus saw. So Jesus went out, and remember, he went out into the community, and he's working amongst the people, and he's talking to people, and he's meeting people, and he's ministering to people. And then he looked out, and it says that, well, when he saw the crowds, they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Now, before somebody comes and tells me I left out part of the verse, I did that on purpose. We'll talk about what he felt about what he saw in a couple of weeks when we come back from Inside Out. Today, we just want to kind of focus on the idea of what did Jesus see. And it's important that we understand this because what I see goes a long way toward my actions. It's truth. What I see when I look at something determines a lot about how I am going to interact with that something. Think about it. If food does not look appetizing, odds are I won't eat it. We got in this conversation, I forget which restaurant we were sitting at this week. We were sitting at one of the restaurants we ate out at when we were on our little trip, and the kids were looking at the pictures on the that they put up there of the things coming or the different meals, and they were remarking about how nice they looked on the picture and how it never looks like that when it comes on your plate. And do you understand that the pictures were taken, there actually is a whole industry called food sculpting, where they'll take styrofoam and people will sculpt what the food is supposed to look like and put it on a plate just so they can take a picture to put it on the advertisement, because they understand they want the picture to look as appetizing as possible, as perfect as possible, because they know if I brought you the food and it just looked disgusting, it does not matter how good it would taste, you're going to look at it and go, ugh. As a matter of fact, did you know that 70% of your opinion, by the way, I forgot an R there, 70% of your opinion about a person comes from what you see. Thus, when you meet somebody, before they even open their mouth, before they even say a word, before they do anything, you just kind of size them up and you look at them and you start making 70% of your decisions about that person before they even get to know you or you get to know them. Isn't that amazing? 70% is all decided just off of what I see. That's the reason Head and Shoulders used to use the little tagline for their shoulder for their shampoo. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Because once I see it, I can't get the visual out of my mind. There are just things that you see, and you know what? They can change all they want, but you still just kind of see them for what they are, because what I see deeply impacts how I go about acting in my world. Seeing feeds our emotions. You remember that Disney movie, the Inside Out movie? By the way, not the Inside Out service next week. This was actually a movie where they had all the little emotions running around in the little girl's head. Do you remember how the emotions saw the world? It was through her eyes. They were sitting in front of the screen that were the eyes, and so they would look out and they would see, and based on what she saw, they decided who needed to be in control of the console. Whether it was joy or disgust or fear or anger, they were looking at the world around them, and that what you see greatly defines the emotions. So this idea of learning to see what Jesus saw is extremely important if we, the church, are going to do ministry in the world. So the first thing Jesus saw people. Now, the verse says that he saw crowds. And don't think that gets lost on me, the fact that Jesus started out in the community and the next thing he has is a crowd. So he moves from the community into the crowd. The first thing he sees is a crowd. But you need to understand that while he saw a crowd, the crowds were made up of individual people. So Jesus got to this area and he got to what he was doing. He was starting to minister and he looked out there and all he saw were crowds and crowds and crowds of people. And this is important to me. Why? Because Jesus saw people, not sin. Let that roll for just a second here. When Jesus looked out across the crowds, he didn't have labels. Now, we have all kind of labels. I've thrown a few labels that we like to throw out there and tag on to people these days. If you remember the video I showed you at the beginning, as they were going through and they were taking the pictures of the people, everybody had a piece of cardboard and they had a label about their life. I'm an addict. I'm empty. I cheated on them too. My life is not worthy. We all have labels that we put on ourselves. We all have things that we put out there. And the thing is, Jesus never saw a label. He didn't look out at the crowd and say, well, there's somebody struggling with homosexuality. He didn't look out there and say, well, there's somebody that's working in adultery. Well, there's somebody that's committed a lie. He never saw sin. He just saw people. When you were watching that video and they were flashing up all the labels, it was interesting when the guy was taking the pictures, when they started taping the pictures on the guitar, did you notice the label changed? Everybody had the same label, did they not? They were all beloved. You see, that's the difference in how we see people and how Jesus saw people. How we see people and we try to label them and put them into a category. We look at their actions and we try to stick something on them to say, this is who you are. And Jesus simply just looked at them and said, I already know who you are. You're somebody that I'm looking for, somebody that I'm interested in. Now here's the question. As these crowds began to gather, do you think these people were in them? Do you think as Jesus was there on that hillside preaching, do you not think that there was somebody there struggling with homosexuality? Do you think there was somebody there that maybe was cheating on their spouse? Do you think maybe there was somebody there that had stolen? Somebody there that had gossiped? Somebody that was struggling with alcohol? You see, all of these people would have probably been in those same crowds, just like they are today. It's just as Jesus looked at them, he did not see their sin. It says he saw people. Simple people. But keep in mind, he was there to die for that sin so they could have a way out. See, Jesus saw people because he already had the solution for sin. Jesus never came here to, quote, put an end to sin. He put an end to the consequences of sin, to the condemnation of sin. Jesus never came here to be the moralistic compass that we try to make him out to be. He came here to be the sacrifice for the sins that people were committing. Now, that's an important distinction to make, because when we begin to see people like that, have you ever noticed that when Jesus talked about sin, it was always on the as a passing thought on the way to forgiveness? Ponder that. Every time Jesus started to move away from people and started talking about specific sins, it was never to condemn the person. It was to offer them forgiveness for their sin. See, that's the way Jesus saw people. Jesus saw people as people that were there and they were harassed and helpless. Don't you find that interesting? Here's Jesus, and he's going from town to town to town to town. I showed you that great big list of places that he went. And as he's moving from town to town to town to town, and he sees the crowds beginning to gather everywhere he goes. By the way, Jesus never had an attendance problem. You never hear Jesus saying, well, where's all the people? The people just kept coming. And I think it's because of the fact that how he saw people. Now, he saw them, and it says he saw these people as harassed and helpless. Now, those words are important to me because what is harassed? Well, harassed is feeling or looking strained through having too many demands made on one. So when Jesus looked out at these people and he saw all these people, he saw them as ones that had too much on them. Their load was too great. Their burden was too big. And then he saw them as helpless, unable to defend oneself or to act without help. So he saw them as somebody that they couldn't help themselves. They were caught in this endless cycle of sin and there was no way out. And so, but he did not see them as just people that were sinful. He saw them as harassed and helpless. As a matter of fact, you know what we usually use those words, harassed and helpless, with? Jesus saw them as a victim. Jesus saw them as a victim of this human condition that we call sin. A victim is somebody, a person harmed, injured, or killed as a result of a crime, accident, or event, or as a crime, accident, or an event. You do get it. When Jesus saw them, he never saw them as these wicked, evil people. He just saw them as people that were victims of the sin condition they now found themselves in. Now, let me ask you something. When I sent out the email this week, I asked you to maybe do a little people watching. When you see people, how do you see them? When you see that person, you're at the stoplight, and they're standing there, and they're holding that piece of cardboard, and it says, homeless, any help would be, do you see them as maybe they are there because they're in need? Or do you begin to think, well, they're probably just trying to take me for a ride? When you see that person in the grocery line, and you see them there, and they've got all these things piled into their cart, and they go and they ring it up, and then they pay for it, and you don't agree with the way they pay for it, and you begin to think, well, why are they doing that? When you see people that have kids, and maybe their kids aren't well behaving, do you instantly start judging them? Or do you begin to see them as people that are harassed and helpless because they are living in a world and they're living in a condition that is full of sin? You see, how we view people changes everything. You see, Jesus never saw problems. He just saw people. How do I know? Well, because sinful, that's the way we usually think of people, is somebody that is wicked, immoral, committing, or characterized by committing sin. So wicked, sinful people are this. A sinner, which is what Jesus saw, is a person who has a transgression against divine law by committing a moral act or acts. Do you see the difference here in how Jesus sees people? You see, when I see people as sinful, a sinful person warrants judgment from God because they are characterized by sin. A sinner is somebody who has sinned, but they are worth redeeming. So I want to know, church, how do we see people? Do we simply see people as, well, they're wicked people? They're just people that are out there and they're not interested in doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so we become very cynical and very hard-pressed against them. Or do we simply see them as Jesus saw them, which were people that were victims of sin? Yes, they have sin. There is a sin issue. But the issue is the fact that they needed a Savior. How the church talks and prays about people tells the world exactly how we see them. You see, Matthew chapter 15, verse 18 says, "But the thing that comes out of a person's mouth comes from the heart, and these defile them." Now, we usually want to talk about this verse in the way you can tell a sinful person by just listening to their speech. You understand you can tell a church's heart toward people. All I have to do is listen. See, we'll let things come out like, well, they simply get what they want. They get what they get. We use terms like, well, they made their bed, let them lie in it. We tell people they need a good, swift kick in the pants. They just need somebody to tell them right from wrong. We have all of these ways that we want to insert the idea of judgment. But I want you to begin to think about this idea. How many people have been to the ER?
Yeah.
At least once in your life, right? You go into the ER. How many of you people have been to an ER when it's empty? Why is it never empty? Think about what's going to happen. You come into an ER, you come into the emergency room, and you come in there, and the first thing they do is whisk you in this little cubicle, and they start asking all these personal questions, things that I don't know that I want to share with a perfectly good stranger. Then when they're all done with asking you all these questions, they put you out in this waiting room where there are all these other people sitting here hacking and coughing, and they've got this going on and that going on, and these chairs aren't all this comfortable. I don't know why they can't invest in some more comfortable chairs. I mean, don't they understand? You're going to be sitting there for a while, and you sit there, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And finally, they take you back into the room, and when they take you back there, they strip you of all dignity. They tell you to take off your clothes, and they give you this little gown that honestly doesn't cover enough skin for my taste as far as what I have to put on. So they give you this little gown to put on, and then they set you on a bed, and they come in there, and when the person comes in, they begin to stick things in your mouth and stick things in your ear and up your nose and shine light in your eyes and poke and prod. They even sometimes take needles and stick in you, and they suck blood from your body, and they do all of these things. And then we pay them to do it. Ponder this thought for a minute. Why do we pay them to do it? Because we realize we have a problem. We realize there's something not right in my body. And the thing is the next time I'm sick, guess what? I'm going to go back and do it again. And I keep coming back and I keep coming back. In other words, I will always go back because I realize there's something wrong. So I am not worried about being inconvenienced. I'm not worried about whether or not I have to give out personal information. I'm not worried about whether or not it's dignifying. I'm not worried about whether it's painful. What am I interested in? Getting better. Now let's apply that over into the church. People come into the church. They realize they've got issues. They realize their lives are broken. Do you really think they need somebody else to tell them how broken their lives are? I mean, when you go into the emergency room, do you really want a lecture about how you got in that position? How many people have ever gotten that kind of a lecture? Not usually in the emergency room. Maybe from your regular doctor, but in an emergency room environment, what are they interested in? They're interested in determining, yeah, there's a problem. They check your symptoms. They check your vitals. They begin to look at things because what are they interested in? They're interested in saving your life. You see, the church, when you begin to see people the way we're supposed to see people, we begin to see the world out there like the emergency people, like the emergency room sees people that are walking through the door. I have never in my life heard of somebody in the emergency room go up and say, you know what, I'm sorry, you're not wearing the right thing, so you need to go home, clean up, and come back, and then we'll treat you. They take them just as they walk in the door. Doesn't matter how dirty, doesn't matter how disgusting, doesn't matter how much they smell, doesn't matter what they come in like. Doesn't matter, in the emergency room, doesn't even matter if they have any money. It doesn't matter. Whoever comes in the door, that's how they treat them. They treat them as people that are victims of a disease. And the funny thing is people keep coming back because they're looking for solutions to their life. Don't you think they should look at the church this way? More like a hospital for their lives, but yet when they hear us talk, do they hear us talk in such a way that it's a place I can bring my problems? When they hear us talk, is this a place that I can come and basically be myself? Can I come as I am? As broken as I want to be? You see, when Jesus saw people, how Jesus saw people determined how he went about doing ministry. See, because once he was able to see what they were, he was able to identify what they needed. If I was in that emergency room and I was worried about how this person looked or how this person smelled or how this person did this or whether or not what they were doing, if I worried about all of that, I would misdiagnose the problem. And I might prescribe the wrong medicine or the wrong procedure. But when I correctly identify their problem and I stop judging them, and I begin to see them as people, and I begin to see exactly what they need. And you know what? That's what Jesus did. See, Jesus never judged a person. To the tax collector, what did he say? Let's go have dinner. To the woman that was caught in adultery, neither do I condemn you. to the harassed and helpless victims of the human condition. What did he say they needed? He saw them and he said, you know what? Their problem is they're sheep without a shepherd. Their problem isn't sin. Their problem is they don't have a shepherd. The problem is they don't have anybody to guide them. They don't have anybody to lead them. They don't have anybody to help them deal with their issue. Nobody's diagnosing their problem. And so when Jesus saw people, this is how he always saw them, as sheep. You see, Jesus understood his mission, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Jesus came looking for sheep, and so guess what he found? Sheep. By the way, that's an amazing thing about your sight. 90% of the time what you go looking for, that's what you'll find. If you go looking for trouble, you usually find trouble. If you go looking for somebody to take advantage of you, that's usually what you find. Jesus went looking for sheep, and that's what he found. Now, we have gone over this picture of the shepherd so many times that you probably could quote these by yourself, but I just want to kind of make sure we get exactly when Jesus said they need a shepherd. This is what they need. The shepherd values the sheep. What do you call a shepherd without a sheep? It's not a trick question. I put the answer on the board. Unemployed. He has no purpose, right? If there are no sheep, who needs a shepherd? If everybody is just out there and nobody else has any value, then what do we need a shepherd for? I mean, we can all go do something else. But when we begin to have sheep, now somebody has to take the responsibility for those sheep. And when the shepherd begins to take responsibility, the first thing the shepherd does is he begins to live with the sheep. That's the difference between a herdsman and a shepherd. A herdsman gets the animals where they're supposed to be, puts them in the pen, and he goes into the room, into the building, and he fixes his own dinner. The shepherd leads the sheep where they need to be. And when they get there, he stays right there with them the entire time. This was Jesus' model. When Jesus looked at him, he said, you know what? I see shepherd. I see sheep that need a shepherd. He's like, I need to come and live with you. Isn't that what he did? He gave up heaven to come and spend life here on this planet so that we would understand that he understands our needs. The shepherd tends to the sheep's needs. We see in Psalm 23, we get still waters, green pastures, we get protection. He puts the sheep's needs above his own needs. That's a little hard, isn't it? I mean, I go out here and I see people out here on the street and I'm supposed to put their needs above my needs? Yeah. That's exactly what Jesus saw. He was unconcerned whether or not they used what he gave him correctly. He just said, you know what? They need a sheep without a shepherd. You know what? When he fed the 5,000, he didn't go around and check bank statements to see who really needed food and who didn't. He didn't care. Who'd he feed? Anybody that sat down. When he did it again, he fed the 4,000. You know what? Same thing. Anybody that sat down. When he came and healed, he didn't look at it and see whether or not they had medical insurance or whether or not they had another way to go and do this. Anybody they brought, that's who he healed. He was never concerned with anything except for meeting their needs so that they would become a sheep of his. The shepherd guides and corrects the sheep. Psalm 23, we get the rod and the staff. Sometimes when you have a sheep, then you know what? It's our job to go out and correct that sheep and turn it back toward the fold. That's not easy always. Sometimes that can be very offensive. I don't think sheep that get corrected are like, oh, great, thank you very much. They don't appreciate it. But you know what? If you have kids, you kind of understand this. We don't just let our kids go and do whatever they want, right? We put guidelines and restrictions in front of them, and as they begin to get older, we move those restrictions out, hoping to teach them how to be free and live their life. Same thing here. When we have young sheep, we should be tending to them and keeping them on the path. As they become more responsible, we should be able to give them freedom so that they too can go out in the world and stop being sheep and begin to become shepherds and have sheep to help that they're beginning to help. You see this endless pattern Jesus sets up? Ultimately, a shepherd would give his life for the sheep. Now, this is not just in death, but this was in life. See, when Jesus looked out across all of these crowds and he began to look at these people, it could have been very overwhelming for him to say, you know what? There's just too many of them. Everywhere I go, there's a crowd. Everywhere I go, there's a need. They're always looking for something from me. And Jesus said, you know what? But that's why I'm here. And it began with how he began to see people. And that's important to us because the question becomes, are we living in God's shadow? Jesus casts a mighty big shadow in what he sees. Because I got to be honest with you, I'm a cynic. Okay? I am. I see things and my mind starts whirling and I start putting, you know, 2 + 2 has to equal 4. I like things to add up and be nice and simple. And so I can be a very cynical person. But I have to get past my cynicism. Remember, I'm not here to make sure everything adds up. Sometimes I'm just here to see people. Sometimes I just need to see people for who they are. And that is, they are harassed and they are helpless and they are looking for a solution to their problem. They're looking for a shepherd. The problem becomes is when I begin to see people as I want to see them and not how Jesus wants to see them, I begin to take out my labels. And I put a label on this person, a label on this person, a label on this person. And once I've got them all labeled, then I can sit back and say, see, I'm not like you at all. Not me. My labels I put on me are much different. And the truth be known, I probably have some of the same labels that I just stuck on them. It's just I refuse to see myself for who I am. So let me encourage you today. Begin to see people differently. Don't be so quick to label and judge. Don't be so quick to add a tag to them. We don't know their story, but man, I'd like to get to know their story. I'd like to understand how they got to where they are. Not so that I can judge them for their decisions, but because once you understand how they got there, you can become a shepherd to help lead them out. We can begin to look at people's lives in such a way that we begin to see people just as Jesus saw them.